From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made this week behind the closed doors of meetings of NFL owners. For months, they've debated what to do about the increase in players who choose to kneel during the national anthem. It's a form of protest that originated with then-San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who wanted to silently and peacefully protest the injustice he perceives in this country. A few players at first followed his lead, then dozens. And you probably know that President Trump weighed in, calling the players ungrateful who kneel, and worse. NFL ownership saw this as a problem for its bottom line. Ratings were down a bit last year, and owners feared that part of the reason is the kneeling. Well, finally, this week, we saw a resolution. The NFL deciding the players can kneel. They can do whatever they want if they don't want to stand, but they would have to stay in the locker room to do it. If they kneel on the field, their teams can be fined. The league called it a compromise. Some players are saying they don't agree. This hour, a conversation about free expression, speech, a business's right to set rules for employees, and the next move for players who want to continue to demonstrate. My guests include in studio with us Simeon Bannister, Vice President of Community Programs for the Community Foundation. Simeon, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Chris Thomas is a partner with Nixon Peabody in Rochester, who I think we can say specializes in cases like this, knows something, a thing or two about speech. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
Also with us in studio is Matthew McGee, U.S. Coast Guard retired, also retired from the RPD, and Marketing Events and Development Manager for the Veterans Outreach Center. Matthew, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
On the line with us is Paul Vosburgh, head coach of the St. John Fisher football team. Paul, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot to work through, and I guess what I want to start with is just hearing some comments from President Trump just this morning on Fox News, and then we'll have some opening statements from our panelists here as we work through the various issues at play here. President Trump was asked by Brian Kilmeade on Fox News about the NFL's new policy. Here's what the president had to say.
Well, I think that's good. I don't think people should be staying in locker rooms, but still, I think it's good. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. And the NFL owners did the right thing if that's what they've done.
Okay. Simeon Bannister, I'm going to start with you. What do you think?
Well, I think that responding, I heard an adage at one point that If two people are talking and one of them is wise and one of them is foolish, that is difficult to tell which one is which. And so I think engaging with the foolish is maybe not the best place to start. But what I do think is a good place to start is I come on the show today both in my capacity, but also as an African-American man whose ancestors were brought here forcibly, whose ancestors contributed to building this country, deploying labor, manpower, effort without remuneration, and then in addition to without remuneration, with the kinds of damage of violence and rape and pillaging that happened to African people that contributed to building this country. And so when I hear someone say that there's a lack of gratitude, that's kind of ironic, quite frankly. More than that, I think the confluence of power and money in this situation is something that we ought to be mindful of. And then finally, I just say that what started this particular conflict is that men like myself and like my kids, my son Julian, women, in fact, were being murdered, have been killed. In this country, in some instances without much acknowledgement. And Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and others decided to, take a stand. And we can certainly debate the manner in which they chose to take that stand, but they did. And I don't think that we should lose that issue. I think that as we talk about the appropriateness, as we talk about the flag, I think we ought to just keep it central that there are people that have been, whose lives have been lost and whose loved ones will never see them again. As a result of that.
A good point to start with and to keep in mind. And Simeon, when it comes to the NFL's policy, telling players you got to stay in the locker room, can't do it on the field, I'm kind of curious to know what you think of the policy itself, and if you think, just observationally, are you hoping for players not to follow it? Or are you hoping for something else to happen?
Well, frankly, I just think it's wrongheaded. There are all kinds of labor issues and other things that I'll leave it to, our resident legal expert to explore. But I think ultimately it just wasn't a smart choice. I mean, it's created that much more conflict, that much more storm and drang. You've got dissension amongst the ranks of the owners. Christopher Johnson from the Jets today said that he was going to, you know, essentially pay for any player that chose to, you know, demonstrate. And I think it's also, you know, it's interesting because, again, we'll get into the letter of the law here. But I think it's also just worth pointing out the spirit here. And the spirit that we embrace in this country is that people have a right to protest. And again, there's a certain degree of hypocrisy and irony. And, you know, someone saying that that should be curtailed. And whether it's, you know, in this instance, NFL owners or anybody else, on one hand, we say that the very people, my older brother was U.S. Navy, that the very people that go out to protect those rights in many instances are, you know, have been vocal about the need to allow players and anybody else to express those rights. And so to hear Donald Trump or anybody else trample on that is really unfortunate.
Matthew McGee from the Veterans Outreach Center, here representing the Veterans Outreach Center, but also in your capacity as a veteran yourself, I'm curious to know. Let's start with the president's comments there. Is that too much for you to hear him say that anyone who won't proudly stand for the national anthem maybe shouldn't be in this country at all?
Yeah, I can't attest to what the president's thinking, and nor would I want to try to do so. As a veteran, you know, we put on the uniform, and we put on the uniform to protect, serve, and protect the rights of all individuals that are in this country. You know, we're not ones to dictate who can or cannot be here. And we do so proudly and voluntarily nowadays, fortunately. So, you know, we and me as a military veteran and a veteran organization will serve everyone openly, and we'd want to. We wouldn't dictate who should or should not be here.
Okay. And now when it comes to the protest itself, I guess I'm curious to know just briefly your opening thoughts on whether you think that players should have the right and shouldn't be sanctioned by their employer, the NFL in this case, for demonstrating, and if that demonstration bothers you.
Yeah, I won't. I'll leave that to the legal expert about whether they should or could not. You know, if companies can make their own laws and regulations to cover, you know, their quote-unquote employees. Mm-hmm. But does it bother me initially as a veteran? If they were doing a personal attack, you know, when it's sold, you don't appreciate veterans. You don't appreciate all they do. You don't appreciate what this flag stands for. I'm not sure that that's where if it was a personal attack to veterans, like Simeon had talked to it, maybe it was a way to get to people to talk. So if you step back and you try to, you know, cooler heads prevail and you don't take it personally, then I don't think the NFL members or anybody that supports a protest wants to attack veterans particularly. I just think the platform, you know, allows for it to happen, and it does get people to talk.
Okay, well, Chris Thomas, when it comes to what the NFL can and cannot do, their new policy, is this a free speech issue, or for the people who claim it's a free speech issue, is that missing the point?
No, strictly speaking, it's not. This is, the NFL is not a governmental entity. The First Amendment protections apply to government actors, and since the NFL is not that, this is not, strictly speaking, a First Amendment issue. I have to say, though, Evan, I love this kind of stuff. I mean, this has generated a meaningful debate, and I think that all sorts of protests, whether it's this one or any other one, should force us to think, should force us to talk, and is most effective if it makes us uncomfortable. Because when we're uncomfortable, that's when we know that we're treading in that zone of, you know, is this who we are? Is this not who we are? Or a third option, is this all within the panoply of what it means to be American? You can have a certain protest, you can have a counter position, and that's all good. And that's frankly the position that I take. You know, I think that one of the things that has really been interesting here is the framing of this issue. When Colin Kaepernick started it, and then it took off within the NFL, it was about you know, the fact that African American men were being brutalized, and there were several recent instances of unarmed African American men being killed by police, and that's how this started. But then, because the president in main part has such a tremendous platform to get his message across, he was able to reframe it as disrespect for America, disrespect for the flag, disrespect for veterans. And, you know, from where I stand, you know, I think that that was a, you know, an intentional way of speaking to his political base. And so I think it's important for the listeners to be thinking about how all of this travels in this political atmosphere, and how the initial intent of the protest has turned into and grown into something much bigger. And that's a good thing. That's the thing that has caused us to have this debate. And I would also say that this country, and we can talk about this further if you want, has had a very conflicted relationship with its flag over the years. There is, without question, and this is a case that was decided by the Supreme Court in, I think, 1989. It's called Texas versus Johnson, where the Supreme Court determined that burning the flag was protected speech. So kneeling at the time of the anthem, well, that's a lot less, you know, I think, egregious than actually burning the flag. So we know that, you know, if the government were to say, hey, players, you cannot kneel, it'd be a completely different story. It would then be, you know, the government acting. And be happy to talk about some of those other conflicted areas once we move the conversation.
On the question of speech, though, Chris, this is where some people get tripped up. Just to kind of clarify, because here's David French, who is a senior writer at National Review, a conservative, who wrote this for the New York Times this morning. Conservatives fail the NFL's free speech test. And he writes, quote, "The United States is in the grips of a free speech paradox. At the same time that the law provides more protection to personal expression than at any time in the nation's history, large numbers of Americans feel less free to speak. The culprit isn't government censorship, but instead corporate, community, and peer intimidation. Until, that is, Colin Kaepernick chose to kneel. Until, that is, the president demanded that the NFL fire the other players who picked up on his protest after he was essentially banished from the league. That was when the conservative mob called for heads to roll, conform, or face the consequences. Well, on Wednesday, the mob won. The NFL announced its anthem rules for 2018, and the message was clear. Respect the flag by standing for the national anthem or stay in the locker room. If you break the rules and kneel, your team can be fined for your behavior. Well, this isn't a middle ground, as the NFL claims. It's not a compromise. It's corporate censorship backed up with a promise of corporate punishment. It's every bit as oppressive as the campus or corporate attacks on expression that conservatives regularly decry." End quote. That's from David French, a conservative, in the New York Times today. But he's drawing the distinction, a corporate kind of censorship, not a government censorship, right?
Yes, and I completely agree with what he says. That's exactly what's going on. And it's just the flip side of political, the conservatives decrying political correctness on campus. This is simply a conservative form of political correctness.
Okay. Let me turn to our guest, who is a football coach, Paul Vosburgh's head coach of the St. John Fisher football team. Has this issue kind of trickled into the football ranks? Do you hear players talking about it, players kneeling? It's not something that I'm fully aware of, Paul. You can help elucidate how this issue has maybe impacted players or not on your level.
Well, at our level, our kids talk about it and so on. We haven't had any issues with it. In fact, we had kind of a reverse thing where we were in a bowl game two years ago, and just before the game starts, of course, we always have the national anthem, and teams line up on the sideline with their helmets underneath their arm and so on, and the referee also walked over to us and said, they're not going to play the national anthem. And our players kind of all looked at each other and said, so what do you mean they're not playing the national anthem? And he said, no, they're not going to play the national anthem. He said, so what? Our captain, David Carroll, said, that's fine, we'll sing it. So they started singing the national anthem on the sideline. So all of a sudden our whole football teams were singing the national anthem because they thought it should be a part of this game. And then all of a sudden our fans picked it up. Then the other team picked it up on the other sideline, and the whole stadium sang the national anthem. So I think the national anthem does have a part in our football game, but it needs to be respected. I thought our players, all of them, they just jumped in at, we need to sing the national anthem because that's how a football game starts.
Paul, I want to ask you a question about the anthem then, because as you say, you think it's important. Your players think it's important. Do you think your players and the fans in the stadium singing, and this is not meant to be a provocative, intentionally provocative right. or a snarky question. It's an honest question. Do you think your players know the racist history of the song itself?
Probably not. Probably not. They think of probably more of a song to honor the country that allows them to go to college, get a great education, and play football. I think that's what they think about it.
Okay.
I think they think that it's honoring our country. And how it came about, I don't think they really know. They just feel it's
sure.
Honoring our country, and that's why they sang it, and they feel privileged. In fact, I've talked to some of the kids. I was going to have one young man on the radio here today, but he couldn't because of work and it, and that's exactly what he even said to me. He said, Coach, the national anthem is all about honoring our country and honoring all those who have fought for our country to give us the freedom that we have to do what we want to do, even protest. He's brought that up, even protest things that aren't good. And we know there's some things that aren't good in this country. And we should protest them and bring them up and talk about them and try to solve them and make them better. Because that's how we were founded as a country. So we said things weren't good and we found a way to make them better. And we need to make some things better. There's no doubt about it. The issue was brought up and somehow we got to resolve this issue.
All right, that's Paul Bosberg, who's joining us, head coach of the St. John Fisher football team. Simeon Bannister, does that history, does it matter in this context?
Excuse me, history always matters. I mean, I think here's a piece of history. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. First sentence out of the gate, in order to form a more perfect union. And frankly, that's been the project of people like Colin Kaepernick, of people like Eric Reed, of people like Dr. Martin Luther King, of people like Malcolm X, and all those that came before them, right? To create a more perfect union, recognizing that we are always in the process of perfecting, of getting better. And so it's really, you know, it's interesting. There's a kind of a tie-in for the last time that I was here with you, Evan, and we talked about our school systems a little bit and how even some of our, you know, suburban systems have some work to do in terms of establishing a historically accurate curriculum. Because this is what happens when we don't have that in place, right? That people don't know the history and don't know what has actually happened in this country, particularly as it relates to these very sensitive issues. It just strikes me, for example, just, you know, the Confederate flag. We're talking about the U.S. flag today, but, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Confederate flag that people say is a reflection on history of the Confederacy, except that we know that what we widely acknowledge as the Confederate flag didn't actually come into mainstream use until the 50s and 60s and was really an effort to continue to extend Jim Crow and the virulent strain of racism towards people of color. If we don't know the history, then that has, you know, dramatic effects. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of work that we have to do around this country, frankly, to be to kind of look ourselves in the mirror, right, and to see what's happened here, and to become more informed. I think that if that were the case, then we wouldn't find Mr. Kaepernick and Mr. Reed's and other players as protest outlandish in any way. In fact, they've gone out of their way to meet with people like Nate Boyer, veteran, and others, because this hasn't been about disrespecting the flag. I think the final thing I'd just say on this is that when you have in the presence of ignorance, we have the absence of facts. And so ultimately, it's pretty clear. I mean, I think, you know, at the outset, I mean, these protests have been strident about, you know, their meaning and point. Kaepernick has said it. Others have said it. very clearly. It's metastasized, I think, to Chris's point, into something else. But I wonder the extent to which that was intentional to kind of, you know, redirect the focus from the main point. And I think that's why I wanted to start with the centrality and putting back in the middle where this thing started, which is that, you know, my son and I had to have, quote, the talk, because that's a real thing.
All right. I see some of our phones have lit up. And as we go throughout our second half hour, we'll take much more of your feedback here as we discuss the various issues at play here with the NFL's new policy. And if you missed it this week, the NFL announcing that they have come to an agreement on what to do. In their minds, they had to do something about the players who were kneeling during the national anthem. And now players are told, you can kneel. If you want to kneel, you got to do it in the locker room. You do not have to come out for the anthem. If you come out for the anthem and you kneel, your team can be fined. And what I want to do is I want to turn back to Matthew McGee, who's not just here from the Veterans Outreach Center, but as a retired member of the Rochester Police Department. For how many years with RPD?
9 years.
For 9 years with RPD. And I want to know if someone like Simeon Bannister and Matthew have common ground on this issue in various ways, and if not, if there are ways to start working toward that. So let me ask you, do you agree with the core point that Kaepernick, Eric Reid, and others have raised, which is this is not a protest against the American flag, whatever that means. I mean, the flag is a nebulous thing that stands for the whole country, not just veterans or military. But that this is a commentary on modern oppression, that the relationship between black people in this country and American police. Do you see their protest there as legitimate and valid?
That's a pretty loaded question.
I'm not trying to spark anything overly contentious for no reason, but I think it's important to know if we agree with the premise. Because the premise that Simeon talks about is why the whole thing started. Do you agree with the premise?
No. When I sit here and listen to Simeon, you know, I'm impressed. I'm shaking my head yes. I do concur. You know, I'm not naive to think that people's experiences, you know, we all come from different backgrounds and, you know, we're, you know, subject to different interactions. I like to think that I tried to make a difference in my time in the city. I chose the city specifically because I wanted to do that type of engagement and police work. There was some negative experiences I had, you know, because you got to break down those barriers. But for the most part, it was positive. It's all about engaging people, getting people to talk, and, you know, and getting honest, open discussions. You know, a lot of times, you know, what you see on TV is the negative. It does exist. You know, I like to say it's the 1%. I'm hoping it's only the 1%. But again, it's vital that the community talk and engage and, you know, break down barriers and build those bridges. It is vital. So again, people that put on the uniform should do it for everyone. They can't pick and choose, you know. So Colin Kaepernick is entitled to his, you know, form of, you know, he's getting people talking, if nothing else, and that is crucial. Now, as a veteran, again, or a police officer, sometimes I am human. I could be offended by some of the things that were said. But again, is that the whole story? No, we pick and choose, and some stuff gets taken out of context.
Okay. Simeon, you want to add there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, this is my first time getting a chance to meet Matt. I believe that he was a wonderful police officer. Just hearing the way that, you know, he's fair-minded suggests to me that is the case. And I'll tell you something else. I was recently in a meeting, and I hope they don't get mad at me for calling this out, but with some of the kind of police brass talking about how we do some community engagement stuff. And one of the things that they noted was that burnout within the department is real. Right, that when officers get to 5 years, 10 years, that, you know, seeing some of the things that they see on the street can concretize into certain perspectives and opinions, and so and that the trauma can become, you know, very real for officers. Hey, now if we're having a productive conversation about how we reduce instances of police brutality and police violence, that's a place that we can now talk, right? There's a site for us to have a productive conversation. Hey, maybe instead of buying the, you know, the some of the battering rams and some of the weapons. Maybe we need to redirect some of those resources into care for our police officers. Because, look, the fact of the matter is that everybody wants to have a safe neighborhood. There's nobody that doesn't want that. Everybody wants a place for, you know, their kids to be able to play and for their families to be able to thrive. I mean, we can all agree on that. What happens is when, you know, certain individuals throw bombs into these conversations, right? Like, you should get out of the country if you don't agree. That is just, I mean, you know, hypocritical and uninformed and just all of that. Then it redirects the conversation from us actually being able to solve a problem, which is fundamentally problematic. I mean, it keeps us from being able to move forward. And so in some ways, maybe we need to kind of turn the dial down on some of the loud folks and maybe turn the dial up on those that are really trying to be constructive about solving problems.
I think it was helpful that Chris pointed out that when the president says what he says, it is designed to distract, but the broader conversation is happening because of these demonstrations. That's the power of speech. I mean, Chris, you've said it many times here. If you don't like speech, counter it with more speech here. And Kaepernick and the players who have demonstrated, there is no doubt that the impact is massive and continuing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, it even though this is, you know, not government action, it's speech that's taking place in an extremely public venue, and you know, purposely chosen for that purpose. You know, if Kaepernick was taking a knee in his backyard, nobody would care.
Or the locker room.
Which
is the whole point of the. Let's be honest, the ridiculous NFL idea that you can kneel as long as no one sees you.
Right. Well, and that they're obviously making a business decision there.
And they have a right to do it again. We've cleared that up, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but coming back to sort of our conflicted relationship with the flag, you know, the key document to our nation is the United States Constitution. And there's not a single mention of the flag in the Constitution. The Armed Forces Oath states, I'll support and defend the Constitution of the United States. It doesn't say anything about the flag. The flag is mentioned in 4 U.S.C. Section 8, the United States Code Section 8. And, you know, you read it, and it's actually, it's about respect for the flag. And it starts out with the broad statement, no disrespect should be shown to the flag of the United States of America. That's the very first sentence, and then it goes down to on to break down what things should never happen. One of the things it says is the flag should never be carried flat or horizontally. Well, what happens in every football game? You know, yeah. It's displayed flat and horizontal. You know, but you know, because I, you know, and I'll suggest that because, you know, it's being done by certain people and in a certain way and not by other people. And it's a different people that are making that representation. It's never been an issue. You know, I read...
Do you want to be more specific?
Well, you know, it's black guys mostly that are taking the knee. And, you know, typically speaking, it is, you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, cheerleaders...
Who might bungle the custom. But they take no flack for it.
Right, right.
White kids and white guys.
Yeah, and it doesn't even matter under this code statement. It says it just should never be carried flat or horizontally. It doesn't matter by whom. But you know, as a nation, we look past that because, you know, one, most people, you know, are not uncomfortable with it, and two, it's not conveying a message that's offensive. And so it doesn't generate that kind of speech. One of the things that made me laugh is that it should never be used as a covering for a ceiling. Well, I think probably half of the off-campus rooms in Rochester probably have a flag on the ceiling at different colleges and universities. It should never be used for advertising purposes. You know, open up the open up the Sunday paper and tell me if you think the paper is being used for advertising purposes.
So you're saying there's some hypocrisy in this?
Yeah, we've got this conflicted relationship. It, you know, symbols are loaded things, and what I like to keep coming back to is the source document. The source document is the United States Constitution. That's the thing we need to read carefully, and we need to, you know, think about what our founders were trying to do in creating basically what I believe is a construct for this country to grow, evolve, and get better. And what's interesting in it, in this, Evan, and what I, based on what I just said, is that in one of the subdivisions of 4 USC Code 8, Respect for the Flag, it literally says the flag represents a living country and is itself considered a living thing. That's a direct quote. And nothing wrong with that, but I think about that, that the United States Constitution is that thing. I mean, not as, you know, a truly organic, living, breathing thing, but that it is a document that was put together by our founders, who were smart enough to know that things are going to ebb and flow, wax and wane in this country in all sorts of different ways, so gave us the elbow room to do that inside that document. And that's exactly why they made the First Amendment the First Amendment, because they wanted to encourage this active, open dialogue, and they were no strangers to angry, angry debate. They knew all about it, even back in the 1770s.
Simeon's going to jump in. We're going to get a little more feedback. We're going to take a bunch of your phone calls. We got a lot to do. Go ahead, Simeon.
So when I was a kid, me and my brothers were avid video gamers, like a lot of kids. And we'd be playing the game. And then when we got to a hard part, what we'd try to do is either find the cheat code and skip ahead, right? And I think that, you know, Chris just pointed out, you know, the ways in which the arguments that have been made post Mr. Kaepernick's arguments have been illogical, they don't make sense, that, you know, we look at the flag one way and then treat it differently in the other instance, that all the way down, that the arguments just don't make sense. But we still have not dealt with what starts the issue, which is that my son, who is a wonderful little boy, is a kid that I have to make sure is prepared to go out into the world, because bad things have happened, that there are people that were unarmed, they did not have weapons, they were not committing crimes, that have been killed. And that's a tough conversation to have. It's a difficult thing to deal with. But we don't get to just skip ahead. We don't get to act like it didn't happen. And we certainly don't want folks that are manipulative and disingenuous and trying to enter the conversation to distract from this really core issue that we need to wrestle with.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Matt said it was kind of a loaded question, but that's why I want to see where the common ground is. So, you know, your son's how old, Simeon?
5.
Got to get together. I got a 6-year-old.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Play dates.
All right. You are more than on. The conversation Simeon just described, I do not have to have with my 6-year-old son. I want to ask, you know, Matt, do you see the conversation that Simeon has as something that is just a perception that isn't reflected by reality? Or do you think, for example, and again, this is a hard question, but do you think, generally speaking, law enforcement treats people of color differently?
Again, my experiences will be totally different than Simeon's experiences.
Yeah, and mine too.
I would hope, you know, that police officers treat everyone equally, but let's not. I'd be naive to say that there isn't people that have biases. By all means, you know, it depends on your upbringing. You know, you put a uniform on, they teach you from day one. You don't see color, you see the uniform. You know, so you build that relationship regardless of, you know, race, ethnicity, where you come from, gender, whatever. But I can't be naive to speak on Simeon's behalf, because his experiences could be negative with the police. I would hope if he encountered me that wouldn't be the case. Again, we need to create dialogue, need to create more positive experiences, not just see all the negative. You know, obviously it gets highlighted with good reason. If tragedy is tragedy, regardless, you know, of color or where it comes from. I fortunately didn't have to have that discussion with my kids. You know, they grew up with a police officer. So there was some trials and tribulations that they had to go through. And, you know, they feared for their dad at times. But again, my communication with them was nothing like Simeon would have to have with his 5-year-old. I can appreciate his concern for his son.
Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, I think that the you know, I think everybody, I hope we can agree that, you know, we don't want my kid to, you know, run into bad circumstances, right? I hope that we can all agree, everybody in this country can agree that people that are not armed, there's no reason why somebody that is not armed should be murdered by anybody, right? I think we should all be able to agree on that. I think we can all agree that there are actual facts, like statistics and numbers, that show that we do have some issues in the way that we administer criminal justice, both in our local community and on a national basis. I think we can all agree on that. Those are facts, right? This is not, you know, conjecture. This is not opinion. And so if we can indeed all agree on that, then that means that we should then start moving towards how we actually start solving those problems. And I think that there is common ground for us to be able to do that. Hey, listen, I want every police officer that goes out that's fighting out here to keep people safe to get home to their families at night. Absolutely. I want every soldier that's gone overseas to protect our First Amendment rights and all the others to return home to their families safe and in sound. And so I think we all can agree on that. And so if we can agree on those matters, then let's start talking about it. But what we can't do is have the regressive culture that seems to be permeating and reasserting itself. And shame on us if we succumb to that.
All right. We got a lot of phone calls. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try to take sort of a bunch at once, and then our listeners can respond to the various things they're going to be hearing. So I'll just go down the list here. Ann in Farmington first. Thanks for waiting. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Ann.
I'm just calling to comment that I really admire Colin Kaepernick and his fellow players who took the knee. I think it's totally respectful. They used their platform to bring light to an area that needs a lot of work in our country. We have a lot of reconciliation and a lot of forgiveness to ask for. And if anybody hasn't heard of Bryan Stevenson's book, Just Mercy, get it out and read it. We have a lot of work to do to make this country what it should be for everybody. Thanks so much for your conversation.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate it. Simeon said earlier, more perfect. That's the phrase he's been keeping in mind since the start of this program. Joan and Hilton next. Go ahead, Joan.
Yeah, hi. This is what I wish could happen. I would get a bunch of people together, and we could wear shirts that say, we love America, we support our troops, we want to make it better. And then as audience members at a football game, don't stand for the anthem, sit there and raise our fists up just to support the players and what they're, you know, standing for. I'd be afraid to do it myself because I'd probably get beers, you know, tipped over my head. But anyway, I just wish we could do that and just say, what are they going to do to us, kick us out of the game?
Joan, thank you. I don't know. Maybe we will see fans doing more, though most of the feedback, and I got to be very careful not to generalize because I don't know, a lot of the feedback I've seen, at least the vocal viral stuff, have been fans who don't like what the players are doing on the field. But again, I don't know offhand. Tony and Geneseo next. Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, you know, I honestly don't see any connection between the national anthem and football. But what bugs me about this is that this is all about limiting people's options, and the Constitution, and especially when it applies to public spaces, isn't about allowing people to exercise their options. So I was so happy to hear Matt actually support Colin Kaepernick's exercise of his option to take a knee. And, you know, it's kind of hypocritical when you actually sing the national anthem and say, home of the free, when you're not allowed to kneel. And I actually think the NFL is going to remove this or actually erase this rule, because there's going to be so many other protests which will be way more disrespectful, like turning your back, like Tommy Smith, and all those kinds of things. You can't control this kind of stuff. So we need to support people in their options. If Matt exercises his option to be offended, that's fine. If the NFL exercises their option not to play the national anthem, that's fine. If the people in the stands exercise their option to sing national anthem, that's fine. But we should not be limiting people's free options.
Tony, Tony, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Drew in Rochester next. Go ahead, Drew.
Thank you, Evan. One question. I'd like to know, how is it possible that the football players are disrespecting troops? I don't get the link with that. And secondly, when you have a war unjust like the Vietnam War, that war wasn't fighting for America's freedom. So actually the soldiers serve at the behest of the politicians and not the country.
Thank you, Drew. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. Wendy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Wendy.
Yeah, it just makes me sad to think that anybody who wants to take a knee should be asked to stay in the locker room when this is actually their way of showing respect for what the country purports to be. Taking a knee has always been a sign of respect in every culture I've ever known, and I think it's a mistake to say these people can't come out and listen to the national anthem and respect it in their particular way.
All right, Wendy, thank you. And one more phone call, John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, you know, I think the players are operating under a false narrative. Statistically, blacks actually die at a lesser rate proportionately because of the frequency of crime. I'll give you an example. There was a panel member of a commission, a federal commission, and they did a study in New York City and the conclusion was that blacks were 2 to 3 times more likely to be murdered by police officers in New York City. However, blacks also committed 36 to 51 times the amount of violent crimes and rape, murder, etc. And statistically, whites, therefore, are more likely to be killed because of the frequency of crime committed by blacks and the lack of frequency of crime committed by whites. So this is a false narrative that the police are targeting blacks. It actually works in reverse statistically.
Are you saying, John, that you think black people just commit more crime?
Well, they do. Statistically, they do. You go to any urban area especially or look at the country as a whole.
Do you think that there are any factors?
I don't think it's innate, but
okay. So you don't think it's innate?
I just think it's a fact.
Yeah.
Right
so,
now.
So like,
statistically, this is a false narrative that police are targeting blacks.
Okay. Okay. So you're conceding that it's not innate, that there are probably other structural factors that, if in fact there are differences in rates of actual commissions of crime, that it's not an innate thing, that there are other reasons for
right,
that.
Right, and I think one of the reasons might be the welfare system that was set up back in the 60s, et cetera. They made a very dependent class and tore apart families, and that has a lot to do with it.
All right. Well, John, Simon, you want to respond to some of what you're hearing there?
So for me to, number one, the statistics are just, those numbers are just wrong, frankly.
Simeon, hold on. And besides, Commission, take a look at the FBI.
The Kerner Commission? Yeah, I've actually read the Kerner Commission from cover to cover.
John, I'm putting you on hold. I'm going to let you respond to Simeon. This is someone, by the way, who works as the Vice President of Community Programs for the Community Foundation, has a long history of work in policy, research, statistics, and data. Go ahead, Simeon.
And so there are so many conflating variables that just completely disrupt the narrative, frankly, that you purport, that just make it fundamentally inaccurate, that deal with things around the structural issues or issues around structural race. But even beyond that, right? So let's just assume that what you say is true and that all things being equal, that, you know, black people are just, you know, out committing crimes and all that kind of stuff. Let's just assume that that's true. Do innocent people that were unarmed still deserve to be killed in that case?
All right, so let's ask John. Go ahead, John.
Obviously not. Black or white, Hispanic, whatever.
Okay, and so in that case, so then Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed's premise was not false, right? Narrative was not false.
Their narrative was that
there are innocent people that have been killed, people that were unarmed that were killed, and that's something that we need to deal with. And then even beyond that, then we can even have a conversation about some of the structural issues, the history of things like redlining, the history of things like the deprivation of people of color in this country that have led to the problems that you're describing. Right?
Redlining doesn't exist today.
It does actually,
and it does not.
You know what I really?
The studies that have been done are faulty. I can prove it to you.
But the lawsuit that have for banks in our local community within the last 5 years is not faulty. So what we have to do is we have to have a accurate rendering of what's happening. This is, again, to the point around...
You're not giving us an accurate rendering. You've got a lot of biased facts there and a lot of bias in your thinking.
Okay, well, I would disagree, but, you know, ultimately, I suppose we all have our perspective. Ultimately, though, what I do try to do is make sure that my perspective is informed by reading the data and looking at the actual numbers.
I just gave you some statistics, and you're rejecting them.
Yeah.
John, with respect, and I'm ending the call now, John, and I'm going to tell you why, but I appreciate the phone call. John, you've called this program for years every time we talk climate change, and you're convinced that the sun is what's changing the climate. And I have tried just to help actual climatological experts have been on the show trying to help you see a different way. And now you're going to accuse a guest on the show of not being open to new information? Come on. Let's email me outside of the program. I invite you to email me all the time. Send me the data that you have. You never do it. So do it, and let's continue it outside. But I don't want to get too sidetracked here. Simeon, I'll let you close the point you're making.
Yeah, so again, what we have to do is, you know, and this is why it's so critical that we have good, strong education that's historically accurate, because that teaches people to actually look at the data and look at the facts, because it's really critical when we have that kind of, you know, frankly, and this isn't a slight, but that kind of ignorance, that's what it leads to. One thing I do want to say, though, Evan, I just want to insert this because as we get close to our ending time here, that there's an interesting paradox here for the players and the owners of courage versus cowardice, frankly, right? Colin Kaepernick has taken huge financial loss. He can't get a team, you know, and I would say he's better than Mike Glennon, but, you know, I digress in terms of a backup quarterback spot. And so he's taken huge personal loss in the interest of perfecting our union, right? He put it all on the line to make our country a better place and to make it a place that's fair and just for all. Conversely, we have NFL owners who, according to the rumor that's been put out there, said that they are terrified of Trump. And because they are terrified of Trump, that has factored into their decision to move forward because their ratings were down and they were losing money. So in the face of when they could have been courageous and stood to make our country that much better, particularly in the positions of power that they're in, instead they defaulted towards cowardice. And that's really unfortunate.
I want to ask all of our guests for some of their final thoughts. That we've had a provocative hour, an important hour of conversation. Matthew McGee with the Veterans Outreach Center. You know, you can't speak for all veterans, and we'd never ask you to do that because we hear a lot of really interesting, varied positions from veterans on what has been a very emotional issue. Do you feel we're making progress? Are you hearing more? Because you said at first, even you yourself, you kind of thought, boy, is this a protest against the flag, against the work that we've done as veterans? You don't necessarily see it quite that way today. I don't know that you're fully, you know, where Simeon is, but do you feel that there's progress being made? You feel there's conversation happening?
I would certainly hope that there's progress being made. And during this conversation, I was sitting back and I was thinking, you know, so I go to a lot of sporting events. What irritates me maybe more than, you know, than the protest piece now, because, you know, you have time to cool off. And if you listen to rational people and you hear their side, then you can understand where they're coming from. But when you look around, you see, and I don't know if it's a generational thing, but you see kids on their phones, not taking their cover off or their hat, if you will, you know, that just irritates me a little bit, because that's almost like defiance. They're not making any statement. They're just, you know,
disinterested,
exactly. So
they're still ordering food, standing in line.
Still ordering food, and spilling beer on me. I will say, though, as a veteran and as military members, no one signs up to be, you know, a ploy in a political agenda to do it. You know, we do it for the Constitution. We raise our right hand as for the Constitution, and we're to serve and protect all the citizens of the United States. So.
Paul Vosburgh, head coach of the St. John Fisher football team. Do you think we will see any forms of these kinds of demonstrations on the college level?
I really don't think we will. I think if they do, they're, you know, I know from our point of view, if our players decide to kneel there, that's up to them. We're not going to tell them they can't, and we're not going to hold them in the locker room either. I'm not going to tell them to stay in the locker room.
Sure.
I just want them to be respectful to our country and be respectful to all our veterans. That's
okay.
All I ask.
Sure. Do you think if they kneel, they are disrespectful to the country and to veterans?
No, I don't, because I think sometimes kneeling is also a show of we kneel before certain people on certain things, and that's respectful. So,
okay. Chris Thomas, we know that that the NFL can do this. The policy is legal. It's protected. The question is, with speech, in your own view, as someone who's studied this for a long time, we're probably going to see different forms of speech, I would think, here. Don't you think?
Yeah, this is not over. This is going to keep going. There will be players who will push the issue, as I think there is their right to do, and I think that there will be politicians who will continue to exploit the issue.
Sure, and we had a chance to talk to Roland Williams. We'll post that sound online in conjunction with this podcast, a short interview with the former Super Bowl champion who has done some work, founder of Champion Academy in Rochester. And he told us, as you'll hear in the interview if you listen to it online, that that he thinks that there will be probably some other forms of this kind of demonstration, and that the NFL is well within their rights. The players have to understand that the NFL can do this. The question is, what's the choice of everyone? I'm curious to know what fans do, Simeon. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be good for business, or will it be bad for it? There's a lot of sort of choices and next steps here that I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Well, I'll tell you this. I love sports. I mean, I pretty much everything. I mean, I watch it all, including historically the NFL. And I got to tell you, I'm turning my television off until the NFL reverses its ruling. Because if Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and others can lose millions of dollars to take a stand, the least I can do is flip my switch at my house. We can all be more vocal. I think you said something earlier that a lot of the vociferous outcry has been from folks that support the NFL and support Donald Trump. Hey, listen, those of us that don't. Get vocal. Get in the game. Let's really, let folks know that we've got a important fight to take on to make our country the best that it can possibly be. And I emphasize our country.
Joan and Hilton said something similar when she wants to see more fans get involved and use their voice. We'll see. But I want to thank all of our guests. Coach Vosburgh, good luck to the team. Thanks for taking the time to share your insight with what you've seen on your own level of football. Thanks for taking the time, Coach.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Chris Thomas with Nixon Peabody. As always, thanks for the expertise. Chris, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Matthew McGee, you can find him at the Veterans Outreach Center. U.S. Coast Guard retired, RPD retired. We thank you for your service, and thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Simeon Bannister, who's the Vice President of Community Programs for the Community Foundation. Simeon, always good to have you. Thanks for being
here. Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Emma.
Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. Enjoy this gorgeous afternoon, wherever you are, and we'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.